hand and pulled her into the forest. And watch out for a strange spell. That's what Tedros used against me. But Sophie couldn't hear Agatha's voice any more, only the frantic thumps of her own heart, knowing the time had come.
"Any questions about the plan once Sophie transforms?"
Yuba whispered to Agatha, his face clear of the magical pox he'd given himself during class. He eyed Sophie, pumping herself a glass of water in the kitchen, and lowered his voice even more.
"It is her surest way into the boy's castle."
But are you sure it will work?" Agatha whispered back, appalled by what the gnome was proposing. "Suppose the Krogs think she's a..." She held her tongue, for Sophie had stopped pumping water and could hear them now. "Sophie, we were just waiting for you," Agatha called quickly, hand shaking as she unfolded a bamboo curtain in the corner of the den. "Remember, the spell only lasts 3 days."
"Which gives Sophie only until the trial begins," the gnome said. "Sophie must retrieve the pen and storybook before then."
He stoked the fire with his staff, and his den swathed in hot glow.
"Remember, the schoolmaster's tower will chase Sophie once she takes the story in, and the boys will know they've been tricked. Agatha, you must be waiting the instant she returns, ready to make your wish. The pen will write the end in your book, and you'll both be gone before the boys attack."
Agatha's throat bobbed. "And Sophie can revert to a girl as soon as she escapes?"
"The same way she'd unmogrify, without any residual effects."
"Hear that, Sophie?" Agatha said, hanging her friend's cloak on the curtain hook. "You can revert without any..." But Sophie was still hunched in the kitchen, staring mournfully at her reflection in a glass flower vase. Agatha came up behind her. "We have to get you there before curfew." Sophie took one last long look at her face, then forced a smile and huffed past Agatha towards the curtain, blathering to herself. "Boys played girls all the time in old theatre, didn't they? A good old spot of make-believe, a tour de force even. Brava! Brava!" Agatha waved at Huber to give Sophie the potion as quickly as possible. A few moments later, Sophie stood behind the bamboo curtain, clutching the vial. "Just a spot of make-believe," she cooed, starting to feel rather cocksure about all of this.
"Drink it in sips," Yuba's voice said on the other side. "It will ease the process."
With a deep breath, Sophie yanked the glass cork from the tear-shaped bottle. A blast of sandalwood, musk, and sweat blinded her, and she recorked it, hacking and wheezing. She held the vial far away from her and stared at the violet potion smoking dangerously. This wasn't make-believe. Silence festered in the gnome's lair. "I'll go if you can't," Agatha's voice said gently. "Just say the word." Sophie thought of all the torments her friend had endured for her last year, flying through flames as a dove, surviving for weeks as a cockroach, risking her life in a sewer, facing the murderous schoolmaster. "I need more than a friend," Agatha had told her prince. Sophie pictured Agatha wrapped in his arms in that tower, so madly in love. Sophie banished the thought, panicked. Doing this would show Agatha just how much she needed her. Doing this would make Agatha never doubt her again. In a flash, Sophie ripped out the cork and chugged the potion in one gulp. A bitter acid taste exploded through her, and she grabbed her throat in shock, hearing the vial shatter against the floor. She could hear Agatha scream for her and Yuba holding her back before their voices slowed to syllabic growls, drowned in her choking gasps. The skin over her face stretched tight like warm putty, remolding itself over her bones as her hair turned coarser, slurping back into her head. As the rancid potion flooded her chest, Sophie felt her whole body inflate like a cement-packed balloon, shoulders straining against her girl's uniform, shredding its seams. Her forearms bulged with tight blue veins, her feet swelled and arched, tiny hairs sprouting on her toes. Her calves tightened like melons, and she careened off balance, onto her knees. Then came heat. Hellish heat, scorching and smoking through every pore, incinerating softness to burn. Every time she thought it was over, the pain spread farther, every part of her demolished and reconstructed until Sophie curled up into a ball on the floor, praying this was all a dream. A dream she'd wake up from in an empty grave as her mother held her and wiped her tears, whispering it was all a mistake.
Sophie?
No answer came. Agatha broke free of Yuba's grip. Sophie, are you okay? When no reply came, Agatha gave the gnome a worried look and hustled for the curtain. Something stirred behind it, and Agatha froze. Slowly, a figure stepped out, hooded in Sophie's navy girl's cloak. The cloak didn't fit anymore. Agatha's eyes drifted down strong knees, muscular calves, hairy ankles, to two big, unsteady feet. She inched towards the figure, holding her breath. She could feel Yuba clinging to the tail of her shirt, peeking behind her. Standing on tiptoes, Agatha slowly reached for the hood and pulled it back. She toppled with a gasp, taking the gnome with her. By the time she looked up, Sophie had already grabbed the glass vase off the table and collapsed against the wall, whimpering in fright at her reflection. She'd morphed into a powerful, square-jawed version of herself, with short, fluffy blonde hair, high cheekbones, straight brows, and deep-set emerald eyes. Long-limbed but taut with muscle, she looked like an elfin prince, with big, pulled-back ears, a sharp, regal nose and a dimpled chin. Her hands gripping the undersized cloak were hardy and big-knuckled, her shoulders broad, narrowing down to a trim waist, and her golden, stubbled cheeks streaked with fiery blush. Sophie wheezed like a punctured balloon.
I'm a boy.
Only her voice didn't sound like a boy's at all.
The spell's one shortcoming. Still have your old sound,
Yuba sighed.
Breathe from your belly and speak in low tones, and it'll sound about right.
He chewed his lip, studying her.
But strong face, solid trunk. Jolly good work, I'd say. None of those lads will suspect a thing.
But Sophie's eyes stayed on her reflection, doubting the gnome. For as she touched her face and form beneath her cloak, she felt the boy on the outside, hard and toughened, like a rock shell. But inside she was the soft, scared girl who didn't want to leave her friend. Look close, and the boys would find her. Look close, and she'd be dead before dawn. She gazed up at Agatha, who stared speechless at the sculpted, sharp-jawed face in the vase's reflection. Even better looking as a boy, I have to say, Agatha marvelled, finally. Sophie flung the flowers out of the vase at her, and Agatha ducked. Sophie turned away, shaking.
I don't know how to be a boy, Sophie said, voice high, tears streaking her stubbled cheeks. I don't know how to walk, or act, or...
You won the challenge for a reason, Sophie, Agatha said behind her. I know you can do this.
Not without you there,
Sophie rasped. Agatha touched her friend's back, feeling unfamiliar muscle beneath her fingers. I need you to be a boy now, she said, her voice calm. Just be a boy and get us home. Sophie nodded in her alien body and tried to stop shivering. Agatha's faith slowly seeped into her, steadying her heart. They'd been through so much, trying to hold on to each other. But now, only she could get them to the end. Her friend was right. She was a boy now, and she had to act like one. With a deep breath, she braced herself and turned into the light.
"I need clothes," she said,
voice sharp and low. Agatha stared at the elfin boy's hardened face and for the first time saw a stranger. Agatha smiled her old crooked smile. "What you need is a name." Hort hugged his pillow, still in underpants, tossing and turning in his smelly bed, while a hulking prince snored like a gorilla across the room. The last week had been miserable. With the trial approaching, the teachers had taken over, determined that the boys win and restore the school for good and evil. Not that Hort cared about any of it any more. Tomorrow was the first day of official trial tryouts, and he didn't have the faintest chance of making the team. He still hadn't gotten a new uniform. The new princes called him Wart, the big ones kept stealing his lunch pail, and without Dot here, he didn't have anyone to talk to. Why was he at this horrible place? What had the schoolmaster possibly seen in him? He was a bad villain and an even worse son. Hort rubbed his eyes, thinking of his dad's body lying in the garden of good and evil, with a mile-long line of corpses awaiting burial. Hort couldn't even afford a coffin, so his father lay to waste beneath circling vultures, the cryptkeeper years away from reaching him. Hort grated his teeth. If he won the trial, he'd have the treasure to give his father the most beautiful coffin in the woods. If he won the trial, he'd have revenge on the girl who'd broken his heart. No one would ever question him being soft again. A hacking snore snapped his trance, and Hort shoved his pillow over his head, tempted to suffocate himself and die. There'd be no treasure. There'd be no revenge, because that hairy, big-chested prince in the other bed was going to make the trial team, and his scrawny waste of a self wasn't. "If I could just have one friend here," Hort prayed. "One friend who could make him feel like more than a loser." Sniffling, he balled his knees and huddled near the window, pulling the covers over his head. Hort bolted back up, gaping through the window. There was a body on the boy's shore, the tattered, wet clothes streaked with blood. Moonlight seeped from behind a cloud, trickling onto the boy's pale forearm. And for a second, Hort saw his fingers twitch. Gasping, he flung off his covers and raced out of bed. Surely the best way to make a new friend was to start by saving his life.
"What's your name?" a familiar voice snarled.
Sophie's eyes flickered open to her hard stomach against the floor, her thick hands cuffed. Her abundance of new muscles ached, and a bleary haze clouded her vision. She remembered little of how she'd arrived, only fleeting images of her refashioning Yuba's ragged tablecloth into a tunic big enough to cover her bulky new frame. "I have shoulders like an elephant," she crabbed. Lumbering awkwardly behind Agatha and the gnome onto the girls' shore, "Why is everything so stiff?" and managing a histrionic goodbye. "Farewell, dignity. Farewell, femininity," before Yuba knocked her out with a stun spell. She pretended not to have heard the plan when he and Agatha had gone over it earlier, the plan where the gnome and her best friend would float her body through the girls' lake towards the crog-filled red moat, knowing the currents would drag her to the boy's shore. The gnome promised Agatha the crogs wouldn't do more than nip a boy, but both parties thought it wiser if Sophie wasn't awake for the experience, and Sophie certainly saw no reason to argue. She glanced down at the serrated tooth marks and drips of blood across her tunic, and was thankful the first few hours of her life as a boy had been mostly spent unconscious.
"What's your name?"
Sophie slowly lifted her eyes to Castor, standing in front of the male faculty, all clad in black and red robes, glowering down at the new boy in front of them. Sophie lurched to her knees, heart hammering. The return of the teachers wasn't her only surprise. The school around them had been completely cleaned up. Gone was the ape regime, with boys swinging from rafters, graffitied doors, and a putrid stench. Evil's foyer had been repainted blood crimson, the walls decorated with scarlet snake crests. The three staircases in the anteroom had been given fresh coats of black paint, the twisting banisters painted red like red-bellied snakes. High on the stairs, more than 200 boys leered down at the new arrival, dozens of familiar ever-and-never boys, together with handsome new princes, all showered, scrubbed and dressed in clean black and red leather uniforms. Sophie's mouth parched. She'd always dreamed that one day she'd be in a castle full of gorgeous, virile boys. She should have been more specific.
"Your name, boy!"
Castor roared, grabbing her throat with his paw. Agatha thought it was a terrible idea to give herself the name of the boy her father had always wanted, the unborn boy her father had loved more than he ever loved her. But Sophie refused any others.
"Philip,"
she rasped in his grip. Saying the name out loud stirred something inside her. She looked up at Castor, hardened.
"Philip of Mount Honora,"
she repeated, voice deep and strong.
"Lost my kingdom to a hideous witch. I come for a chance at the treasure."
Murmurs rippled through the boys, eyeing the elfish prince.
"Is that an ever kingdom?"
she heard Manly whisper to Espada.
"An enclave of Middenvale, I believe," Espada said, mustache twitching.
"And how did you get here, Philip of Mount Honora?"
Castor barked, releasing his grip on the boy.
"Through a crack in the shield," said Sophie.
"Impossible,"
said a voice high above. Sophie peered up at Arik and his red-hooded henchman on Malice's banister, looming over all the other boys. They had coiled whips at their belt, red soldier jackets over their shirts, and the rest of the boys looked even more scared of them than before. Clearly the teachers had found their replacement for last year's wolves.
"I'm the only one who can break through Lady Lesso's shield,"
Arik leered, glaring down at the prisoner.
"The hole was sealed tight after I let the princes in."
Sophie met his violet eyes.
"Perhaps you should have done a better job."
The staircase audience stiffened. Arik and his henchmen looked daggers at this new boy, shorter, skinnier, daring to challenge them in front of the whole school. But Castor was smirking at the stranger, amused.
"Welcome to the school for boys, Philip."
Sophie exhaled relief. She saw Arik's glare burning colder.
"In 3 nights' time, we face a buffoonish trial against girls that threatens to leave us all slaves,"
the dog declared, looking up at the boys on the staircases.
"Win, and we rid ourselves of 2 readers who've corrupted good and evil. Win, and the schools return to tradition."
Boys burst into bellowing cheers. Sophie swallowed, trying to look enthused at the prospect of her own execution.
"For the next 3 days, trial tryouts will determine who will fight against the girls,"
the dog continued.
"Top 9 boys after tryouts will make the team. The 10th member of the team will be chosen by the first place leader. Let this encourage you to make friends with the new princes around you and forge ever-never alliances."
Boys old and new scanned each other warily, sizing up the competition.
"As a further incentive," Castor said. The highest-ranked student at the end of each day has the prestigious honour of guarding the schoolmaster's tower for the night.
Boys grumbled on the stairs, as if this didn't sound like much of an honour at all. But Sophie was too busy buzzing with joy to notice. The dog had just unwittingly saved her and Agatha's lives. Win enough challenges today, and she could steal the story in tonight. She'd be home with Agatha by dawn.
No bunks available for Philip, Castor, said Albemarle the spectacled woodpecker, studying his ledger. Castle's at full occupancy.
Castor peered down at the new boy.
Put him in with the runt. Whoever's ranked lowest between them at the end of the day gets punished.
Sophie's smile vanished. The boys on the stairs chortled as Albemarle dutifully pecked into parchment. Arik was grinning at her now. The runt, Sophie thought, tensing. Who's the runt? Castor unlocked her cuffs.
Go get yourself settled before class, boy. Anyone want to show young Philip here his room?
Fumbling bootsteps thundered down the stairs, and Sophie squinted up at Hort, crashing through boys like a loon in a new uniform two sizes too big.
That's me, Philip.
He snatched the schedule from Albemarle's beak and yanked the new boy to his feet.
I'm Hort, and I saved you, so now we can be best friends, even though you're an ever.
He gushed, shoving him his schedule.
I'll explain classes, rules, and you can sit with me at lunch, and...
But Sophie wasn't listening. All she could see was the top of the parchment page, freshly pecked in stiff, unmistakable letters. Philip of Mountanora, boy, second year, roommate, Tedros. It answered her questions about the runt. Chapter 17. Two Schools, Two Missions.
Agatha?
Agatha stirred, snowflakes melting on her eyelids.
Agatha, wake up.
Agatha opened her eyes to see Tedros, clean-shaven in his blue Everboy's uniform, kneeling in front of her bed, hair dusted with snow. He gently brushed back her hair.
Come with me, Agatha, he whispered, before it's too late.
She looked into his eyes as he leaned over her, his soft and innocent eyes, just like they once were, his lips coming for hers. She felt his warm breath, then his mouth's sweet taste. Agatha bolted awake, burning with sweat and clutching her pillow. For a moment, she wondered why Reaper wasn't curled next to her like he usually was. Then it all came flooding back. Agatha sprang up to the sight of morning snow blowing through the window on a wind swirling across two empty canopied beds before settling on hers. Agatha couldn't breathe, staring at Sophie's perfectly made sheets dotted with snow. Her best friend was in the enemy's castle, risking her life for them as a boy to get them home, and she'd just dreamed of... Agatha gasped and scrambled out of bed, quashing the thought. It was nothing, just a leftover, a residue, a phantom of a wish that would soon be corrected. What mattered now was Sophie. She swiveled frantically to the clock as the hands ticked past 7:30. 15 hours before she'd know if Sophie had survived. 54,000 seconds. They'd arranged to each hang a lantern in their window at sunset to communicate with the other. Green flamed if they were safe, red flamed if they weren't. Until then, all Agatha had was the image of her best friend, once an aspiring princess, now a hard-edged prince, dragged unconscious into the boy's castle by Hort. Agatha flung around the room, pulling on pieces of her uniform, still a bit flustered by her dream. Getting rid of Beatrix last night had been easy enough, a few coughs at curfew check, splotches of beetroot on her face, and a reminder of Yuba's contagiousness sent her roommate dragging all her trunks into Rena's quarters. Still, someone would come checking on her and Sophie before long. Agatha fumbled towards the door, jiggling her feet into her clumps. She had to find Professor Dovey and confess everything. Dovey was a famous fairy godmother, after all. She'd made her name solving people's problems. But where could they possibly meet without being overheard? The dean's spies followed her teacher incessantly, and all the best spots had proved vulnerable. Bathrooms, supper hall, Seda's office. If only there was a place where even if the butterflies did find her, they still wouldn't hear. Agatha waited for her mind to give her a solution, to propel her out the door. She slumped back down on Beatrix's bed, answerless. Agatha kicked her clump hard against the bedpost in frustration. The back of her heel struck something wet. She looked down and saw a tiny puddle under the bedskirt, where the melting snow had pooled behind something. She slid onto her stomach and extended her arm under the mattress until it touched a thick, rubbery mass. Slowly, Agatha pulled out a ball of clothes, which unraveled in her hands, revealing a black and red leather uniform, scrunched in with a thin snakeskin cape. Agatha held up the uniform, speckled with blood and dirt. Why was Beatrix hiding a boy's uniform? Had she found one somewhere in the blue forest? Why hadn't she mentioned it? Agatha's fingers drifted to the cape's shimmering, black-hued scales. Last year she'd learned that snakeskin capes were invariably used for one purpose, invisibility. But why would Beatrix need to be invisible in her own castle? A strong whiff of lavender came off the cape, and Agatha sneezed. Beatrix may have given up her princess hair, but she'd certainly been borrowing Sophie's perfume. Agatha shoved the clothes back under the bed, quite sure that Beatrix's oddities had nothing to do with her dilemma. What she and Sophie needed was a teacher's help. A soft sound scratched behind her. Agatha turned to see an envelope peeking under the door. Taking it into her hands, she tore open Professor Dovey's pumpkin-sealed stationery and pulled out a small parchment card. Sewers, now. The one place they couldn't be overheard. Agatha saw then that she didn't need to confess what she and Sophie had done. Her fairy godmother already knew.
Yuba has told us everything, Professor Dovey said, huddling with Lady Lesso in the dark, misty sewer tunnels as water from the lake roared past, muffling her voice. And we are appalled, revolted, and flabbergasted at the inanity of such a ridiculous plan. Agatha glued her eyes down, reddening. But also quite impressed. Agatha gawked up at her smiling teachers. What? Anything that involves tormenting that flower-scented ninny earns a gold star in my book, Lady Lesso drawled. Professor Dovey ignored her colleague. Agatha, you could have sacrificed your friend to stay here forever with your prince. You could have kissed Tedros and protected your own life. Instead, you chose to protect Sophie's from him, even knowing her symptoms, she said. Only when you write the end with Sophie will Tedros see you meant him no harm. Only then will Tedros realize he should have trusted you. Agatha felt wisps of her dream returning and squelched them, alarmed. The prince's humbling lesson will spread far and wide, Professor Dovey went on, and Lady Lesso and I believe it a lesson powerful enough to bring boys and girls back together. The correct ending to your story, after all. And all we need is for Sophie to bring back that pen so you two can write it. Agatha quickly nodded relief, only to remember a bigger problem. But how will we cover for her? Yuba's too good a teacher to leave that in doubt,
Professor Dovey said, glancing back down the tunnel. Seeing your places are both guaranteed for the trial team, he sent word to the dean as Helga, asking to personally train you in the Blue Forest for the remaining 3 days, assuring her it will increase your chances of victory over the boys. Agatha's eyes bulged. And? She's rather surprisingly agreed, provided you're both ready to compete on trial eve. She thinks you're both with Helga as of this morning. That solves everything, Agatha gushed with relief.
Not quite,
Lady Leso snapped, rushing sewer water flecking her gown. There still remains the question of where Sophie's symptoms have gone. She said they were conjured by someone else, Agatha defended.
Indeed, said Lady Leso, but a witch's symptoms cannot be conjured, unless by magic far more formidable than ours. So there's two possibilities. First, that Sophie is lying about forgiving your wish for Tedros, and you've in fact sent a deadly witch to your prince.
No, Agatha said forcefully. Sophie's good now. I know it.
Are you sure she's good, Agatha? Said Professor Dovey, exchanging looks with her colleague. This is absolutely crucial.
After what she just did to get me home, Agatha shot back, 100% sure.
Then the symptoms were surely conjured by a powerful force, said Professor Dovey, a force that happened to be in each and every place that Sophie's symptoms appeared. A force Lady Leso and I have been trying to warn you of since your arrival.
Agatha heard the answer in her scolding tone. Dean Seder, she blurted. It can't be. She wants us friends.
Evelyn is a dangerous woman, Agatha, said Lady Leso, tensing with that strange fear Agatha had seen before. If she conjured Sophie's symptoms, there's no reason to believe she wants you and Sophie friends at all.
Agatha gaped at her. But she'd never want me to think Sophie a witch.
You know nothing of Evelyn Seder and what she's capable of, Lady Leso retorted, eyes suddenly wet.
What? How would you...
Because Clarissa and I watched Evelyn Seder evicted from this school 10 years ago,
spat Lady Leso, red-faced.
The same school that is now on her side.
Agatha stared at her, stunned.
Who's there?
A voice echoed behind them. They twirled to see a shadow down the tunnel, creeping through the fog. Professor Dovey stiffened and grabbed Agatha's shoulders.
Once you are banished, the school never lets you return. But your and Sophie's fairy tale somehow let her back in, Agatha. She's part of your story now, just like the schoolmaster was a year ago. And if she conjured Sophie's symptoms, surely she, too, has an ending in mind.
Agatha shook her head, but Sophie's getting the story in.
You don't think Evelyn has thought of that?
Lady Leso hissed.
Evelyn's always one step ahead, Agatha. For the next 3 days she thinks you are in the Blue Forest. This is your chance to follow her undetected until Sophie returns. You must find out why Evelyn conjured Sophie's symptoms. You must succeed where Clarissa and I have failed. Spend your time wisely. Understand? It's the only way to ensure you and Sophie escape alive. Now go.
Agatha could barely speak. I don't understand. Dovey and Leso were already retreating.
We cannot meet again, Dovey ordered.
I said, who's there?
The voice bellowed. Agatha whirled to the shadow breaking through the fog. She spun back.
How do I...
But Dovey and Leso were gone. Seconds later, Pollux poked through to a deserted sewer bank and huffed back upstairs, forgetting to check the sewer itself. Where a terrified girl clung to the wall, neck deep in churning waters, wishing she could talk to her best friend.
Never thought I'd have a prince as a best friend, Hort motor-mouthed, hustling through evil sewers.
Where are we going? said you were taking me to my room, Sophie said, stealing the nerves out of her voice, as it echoed over the red mud roiling through the dank tunnels. She plodded behind him on the thin path in her sleeveless, black and red leather uniform, bumping her bulky shoulders into the wall, still unused to all the extra weight. In the shiny mud, she caught a glimpse of her fluffy blonde hair, chiseled jaw, and veiny biceps, and quickly averted her eyes.
"Tried to make 'em bunk us together, but they already put a prince from Ginnyvale in my room," Hort said, peeping back at the new boy. "School's strict now that the teachers are back. If you ask me, Arik and his henchmen make those old wolves look cuddly. But don't worry, I'll keep my best friend out of trouble."
Sophie frowned. How was it that even as a boy she couldn't escape this rodent? She saw the sewer midpoint in the distance, the division between sludge and lake, sealed by giant rocks.
"But I still don't understand. Why are we down here?"
"Where is it?"
Manly's voice boomed ahead over the churning red slime.
"I showed you where I buried it,"
Tedros's voice insisted.
"And it's not there. As long as you keep lying, there'll continue to be no food."
"It's those two girls. They're hiding in the castle."
"Think we wouldn't know if a girl was in our castle?" Manly's voice sneered. "That pen is still somewhere in the schoolmaster's tower, or the tower would have moved to follow it. Now tell me where you hid it, or I'll melt your father's sword and gild the toilets with it."
"I told you, it was buried under the table."
Sophie's heart stopped. The Storian? Missing? How could she and Agatha write the end now? Suddenly, placing first in the day's challenges was even more crucial, she thought, panicked. If the pen was hidden in that tower, she'd need time to find it. Stomach churning, she followed behind Hort, skirting the sewer wall as it turned to the rusted grating of a pitch-dark dungeon cell. In the corner, Manly's bald head and bulbous shadow obscured the figure beneath him.
"Please, Professor, you have to let me into the trial,"
Tedros's voice begged.
"I'm the only one who can beat those girls."
"You'll die of starvation long before the trial if we don't find that pen," Manly said, turning for the cell door.
He saw the new boy gaping at him through the grating.
"Boys don't like a liar, Philip. Tedros promises the boys he'll kiss Agatha, promises he'll fix the schools to good and evil. And what do they get instead? A chance at slavery. Ain't it a wonder all the boys hate him now?"
Manly sneered, pulling the door open. He shoved the new boy into the cell as he left.
"Whole school's on your side today, Philip. Teach this puffed-up cockerel a lesson."
Sophie swiveled.
Wait.
Hort slammed the cell door.
"See you in class, Philip."
"Hort, this can't be my room,"
Sophie cried, gripping the grates. But the weasel was already charging after Manly, chattering with excitement.
"He'll beat Tedros so bad today, Professor. You'll see."
Sophie slowly turned to the rotted dungeon, lit by a single candle. A chilling collection of torture instruments hung on the walls in steel cages, over two metal bed frames, without mattresses or pillows. She couldn't breathe, thinking of what happened here a year ago with the beast. This place made her evil. This place made her lose control. Sophie turned away, panicked. Two bloodshot eyes glowed from the corner. Sophie staggered back.
"Is it true?"
said Tedros's voice out of darkness.
"What is?"
Sophie breathed, keeping her tone low.
"The worst of us in trial tryouts gets punished each night." "That's what the dog said."
Slowly, Tedros rose from shadows. He was at least 20 pounds thinner, his boy's uniform crusted with dirt, his blue eyes inflamed.
Then we ain't going to be friends, are we?
Sophie stepped back from the prince, skulking towards her, teeth bared.
I'm making that trial. You hear me, boy?
He sneered, spit flying.
Those two girls took everything I have left in this world. My friends, my reputation, my honor.
He grabbed the new boy by the throat and jammed him against the grating.
I'm not going to let you or anyone else take my chance at fighting them.
Choking in his grip, Sophie held up her hands in surrender. She had to get out of here. She had to get out of this body. She couldn't last as a boy. Suddenly, a shot of unfamiliar anger tore through her blood, searing away the fear. Her mind went strangely clear, zeroing in like crosshairs on the boy pinning her. The boy who'd taken her princess dreams. The boy who'd almost taken her only friend. The boy now trying to take her and her friends' lives. Alien strength blasted through her new muscles with hormonal rage, and before she knew it, she'd shoved the prince back with a roar.
Quite the bully, aren't you, for someone who lost his princess to a girl?
She snarled, startled by the darkness in her voice. Tedros loosened his grip, just as stunned, and watched his new cellmate seize him by the collar.
I see why she chose Sophie, the stranger lashed at him. Sophie gives her friendship, loyalty, sacrifice, love, all the powers of good. What do you have to give her? You're weak, empty, callow, and boring. All you have is your pretty face.
The new boy pulled the prince closer, and their noses touched.
And now I see what's under it.
Tedros turned beet red.
I see an overgrown elf with puffy hair who knows nothing about me. You know what I see?
The stranger's emerald eyes cut into his.
Nothing.
The fight seeped out of Tedros's face. For a moment, he looked like a little boy.
Who are you?
He stammered.
Name's Philip to you,
said Sophie, ice cold, and let go of him. Tedros turned away, catching his breath. Sophie could see his rattled face in the metal bed's reflection and held in a grin. Suddenly, she liked being a boy. Keys jangled outside. The two boys turned to see Arik's hooded henchman pull open the cell door.
Time for class, he growled.
200 boys competing for the day's first rank. 200 boys standing between her and the Storian. Sophie galumphed awkwardly to catch up with the herd of fellow uniformed boys driving towards Evil's classrooms. The odds weren't good. She wiped sweat from her armpits, irritated by how much her new body perspired. If she'd known boys were insufferably hot all the time, she'd have packed a fan or jug of cold water. Stomach rumbling, she distracted herself with thoughts of lunch. With the size of these boys, they must have a feast planned. Roast turkey legs, streaky bacon, succulent ham, rare-cooked steak. She could taste the juicy flank already, saliva foaming. Sophie paled, smearing away drool. Since when did she think about meat? Since when did she think about food? She stumbled and knocked into Ruvan.
Walking? It ain't hard, he scowled, shoving past her.
Sophie kept her eyes down, her fluffy hair flopping over them. Nothing in her body seemed to bend, like she was a wooden puppet, strings pulled too tight. She peeked ahead at Arik, chest puffed, swaggering like a stallion, and tried to imitate him as best she could. Sophie glanced back at Tedros, lagging behind the mob, all alone and friendless. Manly said the boys had turned on him for risking their freedom in the trial's terms. But Sophie wondered if there was more to it.
Boys loved to tear down the things they built up, whether a sandcastle or a prince. And for most of the past 2 years, Tedros had been the rich, popular, preposterously handsome ever captain who all the boys wanted to be. Now that Manly was punishing him for the missing Storian, they gleefully indulged in his fall, like a weakened lion left to hyenas. Sophie watched him shivering slightly in the cold breeze from the balcony, his thinner frame suffering from withheld meals. She didn't spare even a grain of pity for him.
Philip, you forgot your schedule.
Hort shoved in, foisting crumpled parchment on her.
You're with me all day.
Sophie blew her hair out of her eyes and peered down. Philip of Mount Honora, boy second year. Roommate, Tedros. Session 1. Trial tryouts. Weapons for boys. Professor Rumi Espada. 2. Trial tryouts. Survival of the fittest. Castor. 3. Trial tryouts. Defense against girls. Professor Bilius Manley. 4. Lunch. 5. Trial tryouts. Fraternity and teamwork. Professor Alexander Lucas. 6. Trial tryouts, Forest Fitness, Group Number 2, Mosin the Giant.
They've been prepping the rest of us for tryouts for weeks with workouts and lectures and readings, so you'll need a little luck,
Hort said with a sly wink,
especially with the way you bumble around. It's like you've spent your whole life on giant heels or something.
Sophie broke into a dripping sweat. She still couldn't walk like a boy. And now she'd have to beat a school of them in warrior competition? 10 minutes later, Professor Espada stood in Evil Hall with his class of 40 boys, a long table in front of him, covered with a dark sheet.
We have informed Dean Seder in the girls' school that the rules of the trial by tale will follow tradition,
he said, his slicked hair as black as his curled moustache, his thin, self-righteous smile reminded Sophie of the youngest elder, the one who'd streaked her with her own blood.
10 girls and 10 boys will enter the Blue Forest at sundown. The teams must fend off not only each other, but the teachers' traps as well. Whichever side has the most players still in the forest at sunrise will be declared the winner. If the boys win, Sophie and Agatha will be turned over for execution and the schools will remand to good and evil. If the girls win, we will surrender our castle to them and become their slaves.
As boys murmured to each other, Sophie felt her broad back slopped with sweat now.
As is customary, each contestant will be given a flag of surrender, Professor Espada continued. If you find yourself in mortal danger, drop it to the ground and you will be rescued, unharmed from the Blue Forest. To protect yourselves, each competitor is allowed one weapon for the trial. Today's challenge will test the one most often used.
He pulled the sheet off a table, revealing a row of different-sized swords and daggers, all of which looked much sharper than the usual training blades.
In past years, swords were dulled for trial competition. Given the stakes in this year's trial, we see no reason to offer the courtesy,
Espada said, beady eyes glinting.
A sword rewards quickness and strength, so you must use both to be effective. Aim your sword at a girl's heart, and she will drop her flag of surrender immediately.
He held up 2 kerchiefs, one red, one white.
Now, let's see which of you drops yours.
Sophie tensed. She'd never held a sword in her life. Professor Espada called forth pairs of boys who picked their blades and faced off until one surrendered. With Everboys and the new princes well-trained in deft swordplay and the Neverboys well-trained in poor sportsmanship, the duels were feisty affairs.
Chadek over Hort with a sword tip to the throat, Ruvan over an Avon Lee prince with a knee to the groin, Arek over Vex with a simple glare.
"Tedros and Philip, you're next," Espada declared.
Sophie slowly looked up at Tedros glowering at her, eyes blazing. He hadn't forgotten what she'd said to him in the dungeon.
"Philip! Philip! Philip!"
chanted the boys raucously as Espada handed the two boys their flags.
"Pick your weapons."
Sophie's eyes blurred with sweat. Her big hands tremored as she took a long, thin slab of metal off the table. Hort elbowed her.
"That's the sharpener, you idiot."
Sophie grabbed the short blade next to it and whirled to Tedros, but the prince had seen the mistake. Tedros held up his enormous sword, teeth gnashed, nostrils flaring.
"Ready and go."
"Ah!" Tedros bellowed, charging for Philip like a bull. Sophie couldn't maneuver her boy body, let alone a sword, and capsized back against the wall, fumbling for her flag. Her long, thick fingers jammed into her pocket, and she looked up frantically, Tedros thundering towards her, blade raised. With a cry, Sophie yanked her kerchief free to drop it. Tedros tripped and landed splat at her feet. Sophie gaped down at him, then lifted her eyes to Hort, grinning proudly, boot in Tedros's path. Tedros tried to grab his sword, but Chadwick kicked it away. The prince staggered up, and Ruvan shot a shock spell at him, knocking him down. As Tedros yelped in pain, Sophie saw Hort waving and pointing at Tedros's kerchief. Sophie calmly kneeled, pulled it out of the prince's pocket, and dropped it to the floor.
"Philip wins," Espada decreed, and the boys erupted in roars as Sophie took princely bows.
But that's unfair," Tedros cried.
"A clever boy makes allies," Espada said, smirking back.
A 20 burst in black, poo-smelling smoke over Tedros's head. Sophie looked up at the crowning gold 1 over hers and beamed. By the time the sun set, classes complete on the first day, Sophie swaggered back to the Doom Room, the top-ranked boy in the school. She hadn't won a single challenge on merit, but the entire school had conspired to help Philip beat Tedros again and again, tainting the prince's mirworms in survival, scaring away his two wishfish in defense against girls, refusing to partner with him in fraternity, and sneaking a spider into his pants before the forest fitness test. It was certainly odd that all the boys joined in to boost her rank, Sophie thought, even the new princes, as if no one wanted the top rank for themselves. But she wasn't about to look a gift horse in the mouth. As for the teachers, they turned blind eyes like Espada, intent on teaching Tedros a lesson for stealing the Storian in the first place. Indeed, Manly was so delighted that he publicly bestowed Philip with a key to the dungeon room so he could come and go as he pleased, a privilege denied to the runt. Sophie unlocked the cell and entered, ruddy and freshly showered, belly full from a bean stew and stuffed goose supper, and eager to get to the schoolmaster's tower for duty. "If only Agatha could see me now," she grinned, for she'd not only eaten beans, of all things, but she'd passed her mission with flying colours. She'd have the whole night to find the Storian. Tedros would soon face punishment. And tomorrow, she and her best friend would be back home, safe from a deadly trial. She kicked the cell door shut, humming a tune. Being Philip wasn't so bad after all. The walk was settling in, the voice growing more natural, the extra weight suddenly feeling strong and inspiring. She was even getting used to her new face, Sophie thought, eyeing her square jaw, regal nose, and soft, full lips in a gleaming spear on the torture rack. Agatha was right. She was handsome, wasn't she?
You cheated.
Sophie turned to Tedros, sitting alone in the dank, dirty corner.
I don't care that I have to be punished, or that I can't eat supper, or that everyone hates me, the prince said, staring at her. I care that you cheated.
Sophie pulled the door open to leave.
A bit busy for chit-chat, unfortunately. You're no better than Agatha.
Sophie stopped cold.
I loved her so much,
he mumbled behind her, almost to himself.
I tried to make her wish come true. I tried to fix the story like a prince is supposed to. Kill the witch, kiss his princess. That's how fairy tales work. That's what she asked for.
His voice broke.
But I would have let Sophie live if it meant having Agatha forever. I would have kissed her right there, and we would have had the end. But then she cheated. Agatha cheated. She had Sophie under the table the whole time, and she lied to me.
Sophie turned to see Tedros hunched over, head buried between his knees.
How could anyone be so evil?
He rasped. Watching him, Sophie's face slowly softened. A shadow washed over the prince. Tedros lifted his eyes to Arik, smirking in the open doorway.
Special occasion, the captain said, cracking his knuckles. Think I'll do the punishing myself.
Tedros turned away, like a dog offering his neck. Arik's eyes flicked to Philip.
Get out.
Sophie's heart chilled as she backed through the grated door, and Arik slammed it in her face. She saw the captain creep towards the prince before she hurried away, leaving Tedros to his tormentor, trying desperately to convince herself that he deserved it. He deserved it. He deserved it. Far across the bay in a dark room window, Agatha looked out at the school for boys, her blue bodice splotched with blood, her arms and legs scraped and bruised.
Hurry, Sophie, Agatha prayed. For if what she'd learned today about the Dean was true, they were already out of time.
Chapter 18. Seder's Secret History. 8 hours earlier, three witches had perched on Agatha's bed.
Tell us everything Dovey and Lesso said, ordered Dot. In detail, said Hester. In as few words as possible, said Annadil, nodding at her three black rats guarding the gap under the door with gnashed teeth and ready claws. They can only kill so many butterflies before one gets through.
Agatha stared back at them, head swimming. After her secret meeting with Professor Dovey and Lady Lesso, she waited until all the girls were in their first sessions. Then she delivered identical notes to the witch's room and hid in her own closet, avoiding patrol butterflies zooming through and Beatrix swinging in and out between classes until the notes were opened and obeyed. Now Agatha told the witches what the teachers had said in the sewers, her heart thumping faster and faster, reliving every word.
They know the Dean, Dot blurted finally, spewing a mouthful of artichoke.
Hester scrunched her fists. I knew Dovey and Lesso were acting funny that first month of school. Lesso looks like a wounded puppy every time the Dean's around.
Agatha couldn't think of a better description herself. Something about Evelyn Seder managed to turn the most terrifying teacher in school human.
And remember when you said the Dean punished Dovey for questioning her?
Hester added.
sounded like she was settling an old score.
Lesso said Evelyn Sader was evicted 10 years ago, Agatha went on, and that if you're evicted, you can't ever come back.
That's because only the schoolmaster can admit students or teachers to the school for good and